Men of Vision. Men of Vision. Men who have opened the eyes of the world. At this time each week, we bring you dramatic highlights from the lives of men blessed with a seeing eye, men who have pierced the veil of ignorance and superstition, men whose discoveries have brought both figuratively and literally better vision to the world. Today we do honor to a man who has been acclaimed patron saint of more arts and crafts than perhaps any other American. Patron saint of thriftiness, patron saint of labor, patron saint of heating and ventilating engineers, of cartooning, of the music industries, of eyesight specialists, philosopher of health, philanthropist, scientist, father of daylight saving, father of the United States Postal Service, advocate of peace, and perhaps the greatest diplomat of all time. Printer, editor, man of letters, a servant, citizen, and patriot such as no other country ever had in the history of man. Benjamin Franklin. As the scene opens, we look in on a soiree in the salon of Madame Brion in France. A farewell party at the close of one of Franklin's visits to that country. The arrival of Franklin's grandson, William, is just being announced.
Monsieur William Temple Franklin.
William, mon enfant.
My dear Madame Brion, my humble apologies for being late, but there's so much to do to prepare for our departure.
I know, but where, mon enfant, is your grand-père, the old rascal?
Surely he's here, perhaps outside with the gentleman.
I think not so likely. Let us go, however, and see.
Monsieur Labbé?
Yes, Nino. What is it, my child?
This Dr. Franklin from the wild, savage America. He wears the American dress, I suppose.
With the knife, the tomahawk, and the rifle? Not quite.
Now, you make fun of me.
No, indeed. But the good Dr. Franklin is as civilized as we.
Indeed?
And sometimes I think more so. A slight soberness in dress, yes. But he has a perfect good nature, a simplicity of manners, an uprightness of mind, a sweet serenity.
Oh, a paragon. I am resolved not to like him.
A paragon? Yes, truly a paragon, but one you will like. He is most entertaining. And I think he approaches now.
But the story, my good Papa Franklin, I must hear it.
I am sorry, but this is a tale such as...
I know, such as one tells only to gentlemen. Lala, I'm going to hear it nevertheless.
And some other time, when you have reached the year's discretion.
One simply cannot compete with you.
But today I hope to be of some small service, Madame Brion. That is, if you will permit that I use this social occasion for your good.
You know right well, Papa Franklin, that one permits you anything in reason.
See, I have brought you one pair each of all fakes and spectacles from 1 to 13.
But dear Monsieur le Docteur, why so many? Are we all to be these spectacles?
Have no fear, my pretty one. I bring 13 because...
Oh, but 13, that is unlucky.
I bring 14, oh. I should say. You see, I also have my own. I bring these others that my dear friend, Madame Brion, may choose those which will suit her best.
You choose for me, my papa. I will take whichever you think best for me.
I'm sorry, but I cannot. In this case, as so often in life, opinion is of little value. Experiment must determine the answer. All eyes are different, you know. No two eyes see alike. No pair of eyes see exactly like any other pair.
Then what shall I do?
Well, hold up to your eyes first one, then another, until you find those which suit you best.
Here, let me try.
Rather, I suggest you do this at your leisure, madame, and so make no hurried choice. Vision is too precious to be taken lightly. It deserves our most serious thought and care.
I can see through this pair.
Yes, but you are looking at distant objects. Since you wish spectacles for reading, try them at your leisure on some small print.
But your own spectacles, Doctor, you use them both for near and distant seeing, do you not?
Yes, Father. I used to carry two pair when I didn't forget one or the other. But I have both pair cut across, directly in half.
Ah, and then?
In the upper parts of each frame, I had the halves of the distant lenses inserted, while in the lower halves of each, I had the reading lenses placed.
Most ingenious. And do you move them up and down?
Oh, not at all. I observe that in reading, one naturally looks down, while to look across the table at you, friend Abbey, I must raise my eyes.
True, true. so indeed. And to your scientific mind?
Well, the conclusion was obvious.
I know little of such matters, but it seems to me, should the Crown grant you letters of patent on such a device, some money might be made.
I am opposed to the idea.
Of making money?
You know me better than that. No, it is to the idea of taking letters of patent and selfishly restricting the use of something which might be of benefit to all.
Most men do not reason so.
It is an old belief with me. Once, many years ago, in my own country, I invented an open stove for fireplaces. It had some virtues.
I can well believe that.
The governor of the province... As we enjoy great advantages from the inventions of others, we should be glad of an opportunity to serve others by an invention of our own. And this we should do freely and generously.
Nobly said, Fred Franklin.
But you know, Father, what Granddad may lose in money for willfully neglecting to protect his inventions, he makes up in the sheer joy of experimenting and of solving scientific riddles. Take his famous kite, the key example, for instance.
Now, there's a story I'd like to hear at first hand.
Well, really? It's a very simple tale. Son, there's a thunderstorm brewing. We're going out to try to prove whether lightning and electricity really are the same thing.
All right, Father, but how are you going to do it?
Well, first, I made a kite of a large silk handkerchief and fastened a sharpened iron wire to it.
Yes?
Then I fastened a hempen kite string to the iron wire. And when we get the kite up, we'll tie an iron key to the lower end of the string.
But what's the idea of that?
Well, if lightning is really electricity, as I believe it is, the iron wire should collect a charge from the clouds. And the hempen string should conduct it down to the iron key.
But won't you get a shock from holding the string?
I'll fasten a piece of silk cord to the hemp and hold on to the silk, because that is not a conductor.
Well, I know. You showed me that the other day.
So we'll take along a Leyden jar, too. See if we can collect some electricity in it from the clouds.
All right, Father. Let's get going.
Of course, son, we'll say nothing about this. Unless it works.
Oh, of course. Say, this looks like a good place to put up a kite, don't you think so?
Well, as good as any. Well, here we go.
Hey, look at it rise. It seems as though it's almost touching that low cloud.
Yes. Well, nothing seems to be happening. I wonder now...
Father, look.
What?
Why, the fibers of the hemp string are all sticking out.
Why, so they are.
They look like the hairs on a dog's neck when he's frightened.
Sure enough. I wonder if there is any electricity in the key.
Why don't you touch it? Maybe you'll get a spark or something.
I certainly did get a spark.
Why did you say you did?
Get the Leyden jar, son, here. Hold it against the key. That's right. Now, take it away and see if you get a spark from the jar.
Ooh, wow, woo.
Well, son, I guess that proves it.
Yeah, I guess it certainly does. If anybody wants to know, they can just ask me.
You just charge the Leyden jar again and get back into the house before it starts.
All right, but say, Father, what is this experiment going to lead to?
Well, that's most interesting. And what did the experiment lead to? I mean, practically.
Well, it led to the lightning rod, among other things.
Oh, yes, I've heard of it.
Well, William, we'd better take our leave. I still have much to do. Thank you, dear Madame Brion, for a delightful evening. Good night.
Good night, Papa Franklin. We'll all be out to see you off in the morning. Ninon, I vow that every house in Passy has been empty to the street. Never did I see so many people here.
It's true, Madame Brion. You'd think we fate a saint today.
The good Monsieur le Docteur Benjamin Franklin is no saint, perhaps. But he is very dear to me. And now he returns to the far America, and all Passy seek to do him honor.
Ah, Monsieur l'Abbé.
My child.
You lose a good friend today, Father.
A good friend indeed. There he is now. Let us hasten.
I can scarce speak for Papa Franklin. To think I shall no more see your face.
Everyone will miss you, friend Franklin.
And your funny spectacles.
That reminds me. father, Doland of London, does not think so well of my double spectacles. He said they can serve only particular eyes.
But that is not so.
Perhaps he did not accurately grasp their construction and purpose.
What do you expect from an Englishman?
But my double spectacles have served me well with you, my dear Madame Briand. The near glasses helped me see what I ate, your most excellent food.
But you could continue to grace our board.
But when I lift my eyes to see who spoke to me across the table, the distant glasses served me better. Not knowing your beautiful language any too well, I found it a great help to see the lips of the speaker. Ah, well.
Ah, the letter, Grandfather.
It is my great regret, friends, that my infirmity would not allow me to go to Paris to pay my respects to His Majesty. Now, farewell, good friend. I can say no more. Your arm with me.
Farewell, dear friend. May your days be prolonged and free from pain. May your friends long taste the sweetness and charm of your society. And may those of us whom the seas will soon separate from you be happy in the thought that the end of your career will be, as our good La Fontaine says, the evening of a fine day.
Franklin's double spectacles, as he called them, were destined to go far. George Washington was the first to adopt them. This was one of the last of Franklin's inventions and one of the most far-reaching in the blessing it brought to humanity. For out of it has grown bifocal glasses. Glasses that combine a reading focus and a distant focus in a single lens. Many improvements have since been made in bifocal glasses. First, in an effort to eliminate the annoyance of the lines seen across the center of the lens in Franklin's double spectacles, a small supplementary lens for reading was cemented to the bottom of distance glasses. This cemented disc was much less visible than the line in the Franklin spectacles, but it was somewhat annoying because as the eye passed over the edge of it, it frequently saw rainbow colors, and sometimes the cement failed and the disc fell off. But through years of research and experiment, the science of optics has become better understood. Today, double vision lenses are practically invisible and give proper correction throughout their entire area from center to edge. There are no blur points. The eye glides smoothly from the reading field to the distance field without distortion, annoyance, or effort. Indeed, modern bifocal lenses are a blessing and convenience that do full honor to Franklin's original invention. Bifocals are especially appreciated by those who find themselves holding a book or paper at arm's length to read it with their single vision glasses. They encourage those who need glasses to wear them in all times, thus minimizing further eye strain. And according to statistics reported by the Better Vision Institute, 7 out of 10 do need the assistance of eyeglasses today. This is why the Institute so strongly urges everyone to have his eyes examined at regular intervals. And that reminds me, the Institute has a maxim that might well take its place along with the sayings of Poor Richard. Take care of the only pair of eyes you will ever have. This is Howard Klainy speaking. Be with us again next week at the same time over the same station for another dramatization in this interesting series of Men of Vision. Men who have opened the eyes of the world. Thank you.